Hey folks, John Solomon here from John Solomon Reports. I'm proud to be on the iHeartRadio app every day with my podcast, with the news that we bring, the exclusive interviews. And you know what else is great? You can listen to any iHeartRadio station anywhere in the country inside this free app. I used to listen to all sorts of radio on my AM or FM radio. Today, I don't have time to be in the car that often. You know where I listen? I listen on the iHeartRadio app. It's awesome. And they have some really cool new features, unlike anything else in the market. One of them is called Talkback Mic. Anytime I have something to say, I tap the mic and send my voice message and then listen to hear my voice on one of my favorite shows. Isn't that cool? You can send a message to your favorite disc jockey, your favorite podcast show host. So be sure to download the iHeart app radio. If you don't have it right now, the iHeart Radio app is a winner. Be sure to download the free iHeart Radio app today and start streaming your favorite radio stations, your favorite podcasts, and your favorite music playlists right from the iHeart Radio app. Hello, America, and welcome to a new edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. We've got a busy podcast, two guests today, not one, but two. We're going to have the great Congressman Greg Stube of Florida here to talk a little bit about what's been going on in Congress and the deep concerns about what's going on in our country, particularly at the border. And then we're going to bring in a great expert from the Foundation for Defense of Democracies on Iran. His name is Benham Ben Talablu. A tremendous long-term expert on Iran, going to talk to us about all the things going on the ground in Tehran, across Iran, that you don't know about. I don't know if you know this, with the exception of Just the News, there's very few people reporting this. Massive ground protests the last 2-3 weeks. Also, an indictment in the United States alleging that Iranian intelligence tried to capture a U.S.-based Iranian critic journalist. If you missed that, it's a reminder that Iran is very active, even as the Biden administration pursues a policy of appeasement, of restoring the nuclear deal, which a lot of people in America oppose. Hey, the Iranians are actors. They're causing trouble in Iraq, backing militias that are attacking Western forces, including our troops. They're trying to kidnap a journalist on U.S. soil right here in New York. And they are deeply involved in repressing their own people who are protesting for freedom right now. You don't want to miss this incredible story. It's a pretty remarkable statement about what's going on in the world. And Benham is going to bring us all the latest details, all the things you've probably been deprived if you've been reading other media. All right. Now, before we get there, I want to just point out two stories I had on the site this morning. I think both of them have importance to the question of dual justice in America. Are we treating people differently? And so we got two big stories. Let me start with the first one because we're going to talk to Congressman Stube about this. We had a story this morning by me, a letter from Jim Jordan and several other members of Congress to the Homeland Security Secretary saying that the Republicans in Congress now have a whistleblower. This is important, big. Someone inside the immigration enforcement community who says that the Biden administration has literally been inventing the word that the letter used, absurd is the word, absurd excuses to justify releasing people who should have been deported. So these are illegal immigrants that were detained among the 188,000 at the border last month. These are detainees. They should be deported. Instead, they're inventing excuses to let them go. And one of them is they have too much body index. You know what that means? They were too fat. They're too heavy. They were obese. So they're using obesity and weight as an excuse to release someone into the interior of the United States who should have been deported. An important whistleblower story. Read it all at justthenews.com. Very important story. Big thanks to Jim Jordan and the team in Congress who shared that letter with us and allowed us to break that story last night. And then another story that you may not have heard of until you've checked out Just the News today. Carter Page, you remember him. He's the man that got slimed in the bogus Russia collusion allegations by the Steele dossier, which was funded by Hillary Clinton and her law firm, the law firm of Perkins Coie. Well, Carter Page sued for defamation and named Perkins Coie among the people that wanted to sue along with the Democratic National Committee. And the Perkins Coie firm has come up with an incredible excuse why it shouldn't be sued, why it should be immune from a lawsuit, taking responsibility for the Steele dossier and the subsequent leaks and false stories that were out there. And here is the argument. Perkins Coie, though it's a clear American law firm based right here in Washington, D.C., right? It says that because it has three partners working in Beijing that it should be considered by the courts to be a stateless entity, meaning it's not an American corporation. It's a stateless entity and therefore exempt from being sued in the federal courts. And guess what? It's won two favorable rulings already. Yes, right up to the Seventh Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals in Chicago, which, by the way, leans a little to the right. They got a favorable ruling that they are, in fact, not subject to federal lawsuit for the defamation. And they dismissed, that court dismissed the Carter Page lawsuit. Check out this big China excuse that this Democratic-leaning law firm has used, Hillary Clinton's old campaign law firm. Another example, I think a lot of people I talk to today say, is an example of a dual system in the Justice Department, in American justice. Important thing, check both of those stories out. Now we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we will have our interviews first with Congressman Greg Stube and then with Benenben Talablu, great Iranian expert. You're going to have a lot of news unfold in these two interviews. Come right back. Don't miss it right after this commercial break. Hey, folks, if you're a homeowner and you're like me, you want to protect your home, right? But when's the last time you checked on the title to your home? If you never have, listen to this. A new report on homeowners shows we all now have $16 trillion in equity. That's an all-time high in America. That's why you need protection from a scam the FBI calls house stealing. That's when the equity in all of our homes is the target, sadly, of scammers. If nobody's watching the title to your home, these scammers can transfer your title to their name, take out loans, and your equity could be gone. Poof, gone. You have to protect your equity from this despicable crime right now with triple lock protection from my good friends at HomeTitleLock.com. The first step is to check on your home's title to see if it's still in your name. Sign up with your address at HomeTitleLock.com and be sure to use the promo code JUSTNEWS. They're going to send you a complete title scan of your home's title and your first 30 days of triple lock home title protection. That's legendary protection, by the way. It's free. HomeTitleLock.com. Use the promo code JUSTNEWS. One more time, go to HomeTitleLock.com today and protect your most important asset, the equity in your home. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as promised, a very special guest. We've had him on the show many times. You love him. And that's why we brought him back again, because we got some serious issues to be talking about today. Congressman Greg Stube from the great state of Florida is joining us. Congressman, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, we're in some pretty amazing moments. I know it's the dead of August and we should all be thinking about vacations, but we've got a lot going on in Washington and a lot not going on at the border. We're not enforcing the laws. What, can you give us your current assessment of just how bad things are at the southern border?
Well, I'm sure some of your listeners have seen that drone video footage of this massive amount of people underneath a bridge. I'm sure they're paying attention to the numbers, but just to like wrap your head around some of these numbers, it's like 900% over last year on some of these numbers. We had the last numbers we have are 188,000 people have come in. It's the highest number in June for over 20 years. These are numbers that we haven't seen before, and it's because of a crisis that the Biden administration has created. When you talk about amnesty, when you talk about allowing everybody that's currently in the country to get amnesty and become a citizen, you're going to encourage this type of behavior. And it's not just from South America. We've seen terrorists apprehended at the border. We've seen people from all over the world coming through our southern border because they know that they can get through right now. And the Biden administration is going to do absolutely nothing to stop them. And I believe this is the biggest national security threat that we've seen in years. You know, we had when 20 years ago, we had September 11th. This is just as big, but the mainstream media is not talking about it. The White House isn't doing anything about it. Democrats in Congress want to encourage this behavior because for some reason they want as many illegals into this country as humanly possible in the next 2 to 4 years while Biden's president.
It is remarkable, too, because beyond the drug runners, beyond the fentanyl runners, beyond the sex traffickers, beyond the murders and child predators that have been allowed in the country, because none of that's in dispute. The CPB has provided the statistics. It's not in doubt. We're bringing in large amounts of COVID. You mentioned 900%. There was a statistic released yesterday or last week by the Del Rio border chief that there was a 900% increase in COVID cases since the surge began. How big a public health crisis has this become?
Well, I believe you're seeing the uptick in the numbers all across the country and in places like Florida and otherwise because of the open border that we have, these illegal immigrants, the numbers I've seen are over 35% have tested positive. They're doing nothing about that. They're not vaccinating them. They're not requiring them to wear masks. So you've seen the photos inside some of these holding facilities where not everybody's wearing masks. Yep. And it's just an infestation of growing COVID. And then Biden's going to put them with your taxpayer dollars, either on a bus or on a plane, a military plane, and ship them all across the country. And you can't tell me that we're not seeing these huge spikes in states like Florida because of illegal immigrants crossing the border and then being shipped by the Biden administration to our state. And members like myself are asking the administration, we want information on this. We want you to come and testify about this. We want you to come and tell us where you're sending these migrants and how you're doing it. And they refuse to answer any of our questions because they know they can just ignore us.
It's remarkable to thumb their nose at the oversight powers that the Constitution had given Congress is certainly not productive for the American people. Last week, the Transportation Security Administration confirmed to me that they are exempting many of these illegal aliens who are getting put on planes by NGOs. So the government releases people who should be deported. They go to an NGO. The NGO either puts them on a bus or a plane. When they go on a plane, many of them don't have the required documentation that you and I must show. So the TSA said, yes, we've been exempting them from the normal ID requirements. We do our best through CPB to see if they really are the person they are. And then we stick them on a plane with a waiver or an exemption. You just talked about 9/11 and how we tightened up our security after it. How concerning is that to know that there are people on planes who don't have the same identity requirements that you and I must follow when we jump on a plane?
Well, and the requirements that we have to go through just to travel domestically, the laws that we have, the federal laws that we have that are completely being ignored by TSA, the Biden administration, Homeland Security, all these different agencies that we wouldn't be able to do that, but we're going to allow illegal immigrants to just be transported all across this country. It's a huge national security threat. We know terrorists have tried to get in through the southern border. We know our enemies know how open the southern border is, so they're sending agents to come down through the southern border, and they don't even have any identification on them. You're not even going to know who these people are. Yeah. It's just astounding to me that you're not hearing more of a reaction from Washington. Like, you can't tell me that all the Democrats think this is a good idea. You can't tell me that the majority of Americans think this is a good idea. It's just beyond the pale, and our government's doing they're encouraging it. They're doing nothing to stop it, and they're encouraging the behavior.
Yep, there's no doubt they're complicit in the behavior. There's no doubt about it now. It's now out and open. Last night, your great colleague in the Congress, Jim Jordan of Ohio, released a letter to Just the News, and in it, he revealed that the Republicans on the House Judiciary Committee have identified and developed a whistleblower inside the immigration enforcement community who told them that not only are they flouting all of the COVID-19 rules, like you just said, this is an insider now inside the immigration enforcement community saying exactly what you're saying, confirming it, but that the administration is contriving, inventing excuses to release people who by the law are supposed to be deported. And they're coming up with these last minute excuses. And the new one is that those deemed to be too heavy, to be obese, to be less than healthy BMI index, that's a ticket to get into the United States. All you got to do is eat some extra food and put on some pounds, and the Biden administration will allow you as an illegal immigrant to stay in the country. Directly from the whistleblower's mouth, quoted in this letter, your reaction to that?
Well, remember not too long ago where we had a whistleblower, and that's all the mainstream media talked about a phone call that President Trump had.
Yes.
We had hearings. We had oversight hearings. We had intelligence hearings. I was in the depositions in the briefings at the basement of the Capitol. We had impeachment proceedings because of a phone call. And we have an administration that is intentionally violating federal law to fill our country with illegal immigrants and use whatever basis it is that they can come up with, like their body index, fat index is too high, to keep them into the country, and nothing's happening. Like, Trump was impeached for a phone call, and you have an administration that is willfully and intentionally violating federal law, and nobody's saying a word about it, but Republicans in Congress, yet we don't have the majority in the House, so there's nothing that we can do about it. The Democrats are going to completely ignore all of this because their end game is we pass H.R. 1 or S.1
yep.
and allow anybody and everybody without an identification to vote. So they think they get all of these illegals in, they're going to vote for them when they pass HR 1, because now we don't have to show proof of identification. You don't have to be a citizen of our country to vote. Anybody can send in an absentee ballot with no verification. That's the end goal here. This is 100% political, which is when you hear the administration talk about COVID and masking up and the safety and security of Americans. You don't care about Americans. They don't care about Americans. They don't care about COVID when it comes to actually stopping COVID being spread across the country, i.e. the southern border, where we know this is coming in. They want to use their power to trounce on Americans' rights all at the same time while allowing illegal immigrants to do whatever they want.
It's a remarkable moment in American history. Any thought that some of you Republicans might go to court and sue and say, listen, we're members of Congress, we pass these laws, the administration is willfully violating these laws. Is there any talk of a lawsuit? Is there anything you guys can do besides write letters and be ignored by the Biden administration?
Well, every lawsuit that we've taken part of, like Massey filed the lawsuit
right.
on mass.
Right.
We filed the lawsuit on the magnetometers and the proxy voting scheme that the Democrats had. The courts look at that and say, oh, that's just an internal rule, or you don't have standing.
Yeah.
So we don't have standing to contest some of these immigration issues. We have to rely on states like Florida yep. and Texas, who have filed lawsuits on some of these issues.
And won some early rulings, yeah.
Right. And it's going to take time for those rulings to make their way to the U.S. Supreme Court to actually tell the administration, you can't do this, you're violating the Constitution. Until then, they're trying to get as many of these people into our country as they possibly can before the U.S. Supreme Court tells them no.
Yeah, every day it's another 6,000 to 8,000 coming in based on the ratio of 190,000 in a month. Pretty remarkable. I want to pivot quickly to our wallets, because our wallets look like they're about to take another big hit. Not only the infrastructure deal, which looks like it has enough votes to pass in the Senate, but now a $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill on top of all the other cash and money deficit spending that we've done in the last year. Your thought about the state of the American budget and fiscal discipline in Washington?
Well, Washington is broken as it comes to a lot of things, and the economy is one of them, because Democrats have been in control for 3 years. We have spent $11 trillion over the last 18 months. $11 trillion.
And
wrap your head around that number.
It's hard
to. We only take in $3.5 trillion a year in revenue as a country. So
right.
we've spent like four times that in 18 months. And the Democrats want to keep spending. It's another $1 trillion for an infrastructure package. It's another $3.5 trillion that Pelosi wants on all these Green New Deal spending programs, keep people on welfare, keep people on social programs, bump at, you know, the fact that you have to pay rent down the road so people that actually own these properties are having to go into foreclosure. And Pelosi has said to the Senate, so the Senate's supposed to and expected to pass this infrastructure package, which isn't infrastructure. Only $110 billion of the $1 trillion bill actually goes to roads, bridges, and other major projects. Only $110 billion of the $1 trillion. Everything else is Green New Deal light and forcing people from planes to trains and all this other stuff. But Pelosi has said, if you don't, we're not going to bring that bill up for a vote until you pass the $3.5 trillion reconciliation package, which has all this other crazy spending in it.
Wow.
So she said that she's not going to bring the infrastructure bill up for a vote until that passes. I just don't see how she has the votes in the House for either one of them. Either the squad's not going to be happy because they're not getting enough spending and moving farther enough into a socialist country, or your moderate Democrats are going to say, look, we can't go home and vote for a tax increase on families or small businesses or all these other things that are in this infrastructure package because they know they're going to lose their midterm elections in 2022. But Pelosi, I don't think, cares. She wants to try to get this shoved through the process as quick as possible. And look at the inflation numbers because of this. We're seeing record inflation that we haven't seen in decades. And it's because we've dropped $11 trillion onto an economy. And now they want to drop more.
It is a remarkable moment in American history. $11 trillion out versus $3.5 trillion in. The ratio of spending to income is beyond insane. It's just a remarkable moment in American history. And generations long after us are paying for this now because we pushed it so far out. You've been really talking a lot about the different approaches, how Florida as its approach on COVID, and then how you see de Blasio like going to a vaccine passport type scenario with restaurants. What's your take on the different approaches that the two parties have taken when it comes to freedom and COVID-19?
Well, all you have to do, again, is look at, one, the economic numbers, the unemployment numbers, and the people that are just flocking to Florida and states like it right now. I've lived here my entire life. My family's been here for generations. I've never seen the growth and the people moving to Florida like we've seen. And these people come up to me as I'm going across the district and have events across the district, and they'll say, we moved here from Virginia so our kids could be in an in-person classroom.
Right.
We moved here from Michigan so our business could operate. So you're seeing this all across the country where people don't want lockdowns. They don't want mask mandates. There's no scientific evidence that any of those things actually work. And the death rate from COVID in Florida is lower than it is in New York, New York City, and in California and states that did all of these things. So if the science says this stuff works, you have prima facie evidence from an actual scenario that happened over the last year, year and a half, where that's not factually accurate.
It is just an amazing thing that the data does not lie. And yet there are these false narratives in the American media that are just amazing. Last question. Just a few hours ago, the Attorney General of New York put out a report, not an indictment, but put out a report saying that the sitting governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, violated both federal and state law by serially sexually harassing his underlings. Why a report? Why not an indictment? Do you have some concern about the way this is being handled?
Well, literally what you just said is what I just tweeted a few hours ago. If you have all of this evidence and you're going to make a statement that he violated state and federal law, then why didn't you charge him with a crime? It's just amazing how there is a different judicial standard in our country for liberal Democrats than there is for conservative Republicans. Could you imagine if this was Trump
and
all of these factual evidence in New York while he was in New York would be true? He would be in handcuffs right now being escorted through the judicial process and arrested for every single tiny violation of the law. But for Democrats, it's fine. We're just going to say, yeah, he violated the law, and then be silent as it relates to an indictment or as it relates to any criminal activity. You see that with Hunter Biden. You see that with them, Democrats, breaking that foreign affairs statute that was rarely used until recently under the Trump administration.
Right.
So you're seeing a complete different standard of justice between liberal Democrats and conservative Republicans. And I tell you, the American people are seeing that. And the more that happens, and the more people lose faith in their justice system, you're going to have real, real problems and challenges in this country as it relates to people believing what's happening and having faith in the judicial system, and things are going to start to unravel.
In your mind, impeachment, criminal charges, is that the right step for Cuomo if he doesn't resign?
I think he should be charged. And then whatever the laws are for a sitting governor, like in Florida, if you're a sitting elected official and you have been charged with a crime, you're forced to resign or the governor will remove you.
Right.
So in most states, that's the case. So if you're going to state that he's violated crimes and you have evidence of that, then charge him with all the crimes that he violated and then let whatever the law is affect his status as an elected official. If it was Florida, he would be removed from office after
that's
charged
right.
with a crime.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, we're going to have to watch and see how this unfolds. There still could be some history unfolding, but it is a shocking thing to see a report with this level of detail and evidence and proof of sexual harassment at a serial level and not a charge. We get a report, we get a narrative, but not the consequence yet. Let's see if that plays out. Last question I want to ask you, because you come from a long line of great law enforcement. You were one of the earliest people to warn of the consequences of defunding the police. And now we're seeing, guys at a bar sitting around doing nothing, suddenly getting shot by unexpected gunfire, young children being struck in cars, whether at a McDonald's line. The defunding police now is starting to have this extraordinary consequence. What do you think the American people are thinking about the bloodshed that just seems to go on and accelerate every day?
Well, the American people don't support defunding police and defunding police departments. And I think that's another reason why you're seeing people flock from states and cities like that to other places
like
where we're not defunding our police department,
like
Florida. And just look at Washington, D.C., where we just left last week after a whole series of votes, where even the African-American police chief is saying enough is enough. You have to give us the resources to do our job. and you're not doing that. They Washington, D.C. defunded their police department, I think, by like $15 million. You're seeing an exorbitant amount of crime. And then when certain individuals get charged with a crime, they get released or they get pushed out on bail. When that shouldn't be happening, if you have crimes in place, they should be enforced, just like the border. And if you're going to start ignoring that, criminals see that you're not going to do anything about it. And you're going to see the type of video we've seen in California and other places where people are just going to walk into a department store, grab whatever they want and walk out because they know nothing's going to happen to them.
It's a remarkable moment. I keep using that word, but it's hard to underestimate just how America, if you were looking above 30,000 feet, looking down at America, you'd go, what the heck happened? It's just, it's insane. It's just crazy time. And thank God we have some people like you with common sense and the courage to express it and act on it every day, Congressman. We're really grateful for what you do and also for all the time you've spent with us on this show. We're so grateful.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate it. And we need more. Hopefully in 22, we're going to get more like me and take the House back.
That is certainly what you guys are hard at work at. I see it every day in candidate recruitment fundraising. There's a lot of big signs that Republicans are preparing for a wave, and you'll probably be at the forefront of that, I'm sure. So thanks again, sir. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to go change topics to Iran. There's big protests going on the ground in Iran. You probably haven't heard about it because the mainstream media aren't covering it. We're going to cover it for you in just a few minutes, right after this commercial break. Folks, eat stress-free this spring. How? With Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. That's great for a busy person like me. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your Springtown goals. Why do I use Factor Meals? Well, it's real simple. I'm busy, but I want to eat healthy. And if it only takes you 2 minutes, I'm all in on healthy eating. And the best part is that Factor Meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. All you got to do is simply heat and savor the good stuff. Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. I love asparagus. Head to factormeals.com/justnews50 and use the code justnews50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That code, one more time, is justnews50 at factormeals.com/justnews50. What are you going to do? You're going to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. That's a great deal. One more time. Head to factormeals.com/justnews50. Use the promo code justnews50 for half off your first order. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as promised, a very special guest, one of the true experts on all things Iran, from the Iranian National Guard to the current protests going on inside Iran, which you probably haven't heard of because most of the mainstream media are ignoring them. Joining me right now is Ben Talablu, a senior fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies and a person whose columns you've probably seen over the years. He's been in the Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, Reuters, Fox News, AP, many places quoted, and a great scholar and a great expert. Benham, great to have you on the show.
It's a great pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This is a remarkable week because for quite some time, there have been these ground protests that everyday Iranians are using, very much like what's going on in Cuba, but the media has been generally silent about them. There's very little coverage of it. Tell us how serious these protests are and what they might signal with the regime.
Well, it's important for our audience to know that the Islamic Republic's been in power now for just over 4 decades. And as long as there's been an Islamic Republic, there's actually been popular protests against it. You know, even though the Islamic Republic likes to say it was a popular regime brought in through street power from the beginning, street power was always protesting against the excesses of the clergy, the excesses of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the social, political, and economic pressures that this regime had put on the people. There had always been pushback, but pushback had taken many different shapes. And just by way of some context, some major flashpoints, you know, 1999 and 2009. 2009 was the Green Movement, the street protests after the stolen election, where Ahmadinejad came in again. That was Iran's former president slash Holocaust denier in chief. And in 1999 was in response to the closure of a reformist newspaper.
Right.
Those major past trends of protests in Iran were triggered by political events, and they were in touch with the country's domestic opposition, the reform movement. But what we've seen really in the past decade and a half is the collapse of reform and the moving of street power towards openly coveting revolution. And ironically, you saw it under peak periods of foreign pressure, especially when former President Donald Trump was in office. From 2017 to present, the protests have moved from reform to revolution. And rather than requiring a political trigger, they can have any kind of trigger whatsoever: labor, environmental, social, economic. And in fact, those were the main four triggers for massive nationwide protests that you saw in 2018-19, protests that were violently repressed. And in fact, the most recent batch of protests, about 2.5-3 weeks ago, originated in Iran's Khuzestan province. That's a southwestern province in Iran, largely Arab populated, contains much of Iran's oil wealth, but not all of Iran's oil wealth, largely neglected, subject to major center periphery issues, and had been subject to, you know, kind of the regime exacerbating the pollution crisis in the past. But this time they faced a drought issue, mostly but not exclusively due to the government's massive dam building projects and, of course, their lackluster environmental programs. So this region really, really suffered. Protests began there, but they quickly spread across the country. And just a few days ago, protests were in Tehran, the capital. There were also protests in major other urban centers like Isfahan and Tabriz. It doesn't look like the protests are fully dwindling yet, but they certainly haven't gotten the kind of coverage that you would expect. The nationwide scale is not that it was in 2019, but even the 2019 protests, most unfortunately, didn't get the proper coverage they deserved, even though they were basically across the entire nation, and the regime not only used violent force and weapons of war against their own population who was openly chastising their foreign policy, openly calling for an end to the Islamic Republic, and openly, you know, transgressing rhetorical red lines, saying death to Khamenei, death to the dictator, and largely showing that they are nationalists, and even though the regime is Islamist, and even though the regime is revolutionary, the population was showing that they were post-revolutionary. You know, this stuff didn't necessarily make it out that much into the Western press. And, you know, the Washington Post has a saying that democracy dies in the darkness. And most unfortunately, when you look at Iran, it's the Iranian people that die in the darkness.
It is such an important issue to illuminate. And really, this has been a problem. I want to go back to 2009 when the Green Revolution started. I actually had a reporter. I was the editor of the Washington Times at the time. And I had a reporter captured in the Green Revolution, and we had to negotiate with the mullahs to get him out, and we did. But it seemed like that was an extraordinary moment, and there was some media attention, and yet the Obama administration didn't fully embrace that moment. They didn't fully give the moral authority to the people on the ground, and obviously the Iranian mullahs snuffed that out. Who are the instigators behind it? Is it the MEK and, you know, the resistance groups? Is it everyday Americans? This is really about government competence right now, right? That these residents and citizens of Iran don't believe the theocratic regime is competent anymore. That's why they have drought or electricity shortages. Is that a good way to read this, that they're rebelling against the government because they just can't serve their people anymore?
That's right. It's both ideational, like in terms of ideology, and also real world issues. It's not tied to, you know, other opposition groups, whether they're inside or outside the country. In fact, it's beyond the opposition, and this leaderless sense of grievance that everyday Iranians of all sorts of social strata have is indicative of how the regime has been governing for the past 40 plus years in the country, and also indicative of, again, that cleavage that we talked about, a revolutionary and Islamist regime trying to, by force, maintain control over a post-revolutionary and nationalist population. And in any other part of the world, that is a messy situation. But when you layer on the past century of the Iranian people's street protests and struggle for an independent judiciary and struggle for a representative government and struggle for social justice inside their own country, then, of course, it's highly explosive. The question is, when you bring in 2009, where is Washington amid all of this? Because this is one of the few places in the Middle East where you actually have U.S. strategy and U.S. values in concert rather than in conflict with one another. This is not to say that Washington needs to go run and wave the regime change banner, but realize that there are people organically in the ground in Iran on the ground in Iran, actually calling for that themselves. This is not about trying to not fall into an Iraq type of scenario. It's about taking your cues from the street in Iran. And to this effect, I co-wrote an article with a former Iranian political prisoner who is also a colleague of mine at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies after the 2019 protests. And we basically advised that Washington and the international community should not get caught flat-footed again. And, you know, we said that you should have no qualms about standing firmly with the protesters in Iran. And beyond that, you should also have a targeted sanctions campaign against the individual security officials, judicial apparatuses, and political officials supporting the crackdown in various towns, cities, provinces, and other areas of Iran. So you could have a highly strategic and highly tailored sanctions and messaging campaign. And the third thing they should do is to really bring public and private enterprise together to see what ways exist for the U.S. to support either covertly or overtly access to the internet for Iranians so that they can continue to get their message out, as well as so that they continue to communicate between one another, because this really is about the free flow of information.
It's an interesting dynamic. And first off, let me ask you this question. Is there any evidence that the CIA or the United States is supporting, instigating, taking any covert actions to try to topple Iran? Or are we in a leave Iran alone posture right now?
I mean, to the best of my knowledge, no, I don't believe that is U.S. government policy. I think as far as it may get to foreign intelligence efforts and sabotage and things of that nature, you know, there are New York Times reports, I think from 2018, 19, 20, that talk about the U.S. feeding defective components into Iranian procurement programs, as well as potential cyber operations. But on this stuff, no, not at all. And we shouldn't, you know, try to denigrate the resistance of the Iranian people by trying to link it to something CIA.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that the regime loves to do. Yeah, that's something the regime loves to do, to say that not, this is not organic, this is foreign sponsored. But then again, it is organic. And Washington, again, is lucky morally, strategically, and politically, where it can have its strategies and values in concert in such a crucial area of the world and in such a crucial country. And my qualm has been that the Biden administration is simply ignoring it, waiting too long to put out a tepid two-paragraph statement, ignoring almost the Iranian overreach onto American territory, trying to recently kidnap a U.S.-based journalist of Iranian origin in Brooklyn. I'm sure you know about that story already. Ignoring all of these things, ignoring the regional escalation, the nuclear blackmail, foreign aggression, domestic suppression, just in the quest to resurrect what you and I and your listeners already know is a fatally flawed and fast expiring nuclear deal. A nuclear deal that would only briefly cap the program and instead pave a patient pathway for a nuclear capability in the hands of the world's foremost state sponsor of terrorism. That, I think, is a dereliction of duty by some in the Biden campaign, some in the Biden team.
It's really a missed opportunity, because the dissent, the unhappiness on the ground with everyday Iranians is so palpable that this could be a moment of toppling. Isn't that true? If the Western world really got behind this, wouldn't the regime be in significant trouble?
The regime would be in significant trouble, but the regime already is in significant trouble, which is why they know they have to crack down on these protests. You know,
right.
If it's not the water-based protests that spread around, then maybe it'll be the next iteration.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the Iranian people are now not afraid to transgress those rhetorical red lines. They're not afraid to come out in this size, scale, and scope. Really, 2017 to present is a game changer for street politics and street power inside Iran. When the Iranian people are chanting "Esla talab usulgara dige tamam majra," which means "reformist, principalist, the jig is up," it means that they have no home in the Iranian political system. Whether you're on the left flank or the right flank of an increasingly narrow political system like the Islamic Republic, it's why they boycotted en masse the 2020 February parliamentary election.
Yeah.
It's why they boycotted en masse this recent presidential election. And it's very historic that you and I are talking today, because today is the day that a major butcher, Ebrahim Raisi, who was formerly the head of the judiciary and has blood on his hands from the 1980s, he's being inaugurated and sworn in Tehran as that country's new president. And this is the legacy that the country's second supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, who is the country's most powerful person — that's the title meant to be taken rather literally, supreme leader — wants to leave behind. He's in the eighth decade of his life, third decade of his career. And if Washington is expecting Iran's domestic or foreign policy to change because of someone like Raisi at the helm, they are sorely mistaken. Now is the time to double down on the pressure. Now is the time to support the people with whatever we can. And, you know, Henry Kissinger used to say, or there's a quote attributed to him, that foreign policy is not missionary work. This is not about the U.S. forcibly spreading democracy or trying to forcibly have people who have a different political culture than ours. This is actually people who want something and are prohibited by it, by a regime that is nearly genocidal in nature. So this is where we are.
Pretty remarkable moment. And the American people, I think, need to be educated on the missed opportunity our government is executing right now. I want to go to the journalist episode in a second, because it's a reminder that Iran has been active on our soil all this time. They have sleeper cells, intelligence cells, and I want to go back to that in a second. But before we do, I want to ask you about the oddity of the last couple of Iranian elections and who the Iranian people, if you believe the elections weren't fixed. When the Trump administration was taking a hard line against Iran, the Iranian people were glad to reelect somebody that, you know, had at least a public perception of being more of a reformer, Rouhani. And then when the Biden administration is coming in and offering a softer approach, maybe a return to the flawed nuclear deal, they go ahead and put in Raisi, who's, you know, probably one of the hardest liner crackdown guys that there's been when he was the head of the judiciary. Why do the Iranians take these sort of odd shifts? When we are offering an easier path, they go with a harder looking guy. And when we're offering a harder path, they try to put a reformer up. Is that intentional, or is it just luck of the draw?
Well, allow me to, with respect, reframe a little bit of that, because Rouhani, even though you framed him as a reformer, you know, respectfully, I would disagree.
Yeah, he clearly wasn't. He had a reputation as all.
Yeah. So, but by their political system, he's closer to the centrist, you know, conservative, pragmatic flank, you could call it that.
That's right.
But even then, everyone who is running for the position of president of the Islamic Republic knows what they are getting into. They know that this is a revolutionary system trying to forcibly continue to rule over the post-revolutionary society. You know, Rouhani's resume is someone whose resume reads as, you know, running the, or serving at the helm of multiple security agencies. He's basically been at the helm of key security installations in Iran's constellation of power ever since the 1980s, ever since the regime came into inception. So in that sense, he's no reformer. But what he and his team offered Khamenei, the country's supreme leader, is a way to, through, you know, with, you know, you could say by putting lipstick on a pig, try to smile and wink and nudge. Because again, that was early in the Obama era, late in the Obama era, when the interim deal was agreed to. So it wasn't necessarily about who was at the helm in Washington, but it was that at a certain time, the regime, not the people, because these are more selections than elections.
Yeah, they really are.
The regime felt that they needed to put lipstick on a pig to win sanctions relief. Now they feel like that sanctions relief is coming. Now they don't need to put lipstick on a pig. Now the window dressing comes off. Now they can afford to have their strategy and their values in concert with one another because the appeasement is coming. So no need to even have to pretend for them. That's one major factor. Another major factor is, you know, the most important voter in these quote unquote elections is not the population or the eligible percentage of people who can vote. It's actually that most powerful person, that's the Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei. And what he's done really since the one genuine reformist candidate won, first in 97 and then later for a second term, and then he left office in 2004-05, what he's done since then is to have like a never again kind of moment. First, he purged the reformists from the system. Then he purged, you know, the kind of centrist pragmatic flank of the system. And even in this election, quote unquote, election cycle in 2021, he's even been purging conservatives, or you could say Iran's right flank. The reason he's doing this is because he knows he's in the eighth decade of his life, third decade of his career.
Yeah.
And what he wants
time may be short.
He wants a narrower political system when he dies. He doesn't want even the limited political system of the Islamic Republic, principalist reformists. He wants the hardest of the hardliners dominating the system. So he's facilitated this purge where someone even like Rouhani or even like, you know, former President Rafsanjani, who was killed, or someone who was even disqualified in this round, like Larijani, former parliament speaker, veteran of the Iran-Iraq war. Those people are insufficiently hardlined for him at this stage. So lest we forget, we should never denude our adversaries of agency. They have an ideology, they have a worldview, and they've made sacrifices for that ideology and worldview. And this is the constellation of power Khamenei wants at the helm when he goes.
Yeah, such an important dynamic for people to understand what's going on. The grip on power, I think, is fair to say that it's less secure than it was even 10, 15 years ago, right? This regime knows that it's really clinging to power. And sadly, the U.S. doesn't want to peel the fingers off the hold that they have. It's a remarkable moment. I want to go to the indictment last month that revealed that there were a cell of 4+ Iranian intelligence operatives who tried to kidnap a dissident journalist, an American, Masi Alinejad, in the really a kind of a dramatic claim by the Justice Department and laid out a really dramatic plot to go get this person who's been very critical of the regime. It's a reminder, I guess, that often Iran has been operating on our soil. Hopefully the FBI has been watching them closely, but there was about 8-9 years ago an attempt to bombing attempt plot against the Saudi ambassador on U.S. soil.
Right here in Washington.
Right here in D.C., right down the street from where I work. And so you have that, you've got this. How should Americans look at Iranian operatives on U.S. soil? How big a threat is that?
Well, this is an excellent point you bring up, and I'm glad you contextualized it with the 2011 plot. But let me just take our listeners back even further, because there are significant gaps in period of time when Iran is trying these plots. But I want the audience to understand that just because there are large gaps doesn't mean the regime is deterred. The presence of large gaps indicates the regime is recalculating, recalibrating, looking for new targets, and finding ways to continue to penetrate. You know, we are an open book as a country and as a society, and the regime has always looked to do that, whether it's abusing export controls, trying to trick companies into tricking military dual use equipment back to a third party country that can ultimately go to Iran, or ultimately trying to engage in sanctions busting, or ultimately trying to have their cake and eat it too by having the kids of so many of these regime officials go through Western Europe and, of course, the American educational system and the business sector. So in 1979, this regime comes to power. But in 1980, just north of Washington, D.C., in Bethesda, Maryland, former Iranian diplomat from the Shah's time was living there. And the Iranian networks inside this country, then the new revolutionary networks in the U.S. at that time, found a disaffected convert to Islam who offered to the Iranians to kill Zbigniew Brzezinski or Henry Kissinger. And reportedly, the Iranians said, no, go kill this former Shah-era diplomat in Bethesda. And the guy dressed up, I don't know, as a UPS or a USPS or a FedEx, or he dressed up as some kind of mailman and went and he killed that former Iranian diplomat, and he fled to Iran. Wow. That was 1980, the regime reached this far onto our soil.
Jimmy Carter, yeah.
Affected American. Yeah, late Carter, early Reagan. I forgot what period of time in the transition it was. And then that was 79-80, if I'm not mistaken. Then 2011, the plot against the Saudi ambassador, using an Iranian used car salesman in Texas, if I'm not mistaken, who had ties to the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps Quds Force. They tasked him with trying to get in touch with the Zetas, the Mexican drug cartel, to ultimately carry out a bombing of that Washington, D.C. restaurant, Cafe Milano in Georgetown,
right,
to kill the Saudi ambassador. And even now, fast forward, there are 4 people from the Ministry of Intelligence and Security in Iran who are still at large. They're in Iran. Use an Iranian woman who I think was working in a makeup counter in some department store, if you can confirm this through the open source, in California, to bring money onto the U.S. system and ultimately give that money to an American private investigation company to surveil this dissident, this journalist, this U.S. citizen of Iranian origin in Brooklyn, with a plot as wild and crazy that could have included putting her on a speedboat and taking her out to sea, then taking her from sea to Venezuela, and ultimately trying to forcibly take her back to Iran. This woman is a public broadcaster here in the United States. She's got a show on Voice of America. She's got tons of followers on social media. She leads the White on Wednesdays campaign, the anti-hijab activist movement. Basically, a young dissident and human rights activist who is against the forcible veiling of women is deemed as a major security threat to this regime. This tells you all you need to know about this sort of regime, that it would spend time and interest and money and assets on trying to kidnap and extradite and potentially, God forbid, murder and kill such a person, tells you the kind of regime they're running on. And for them to want to continue to reach onto U.S. soil from 1980 to present and not be deterred tells you that they don't feel like there is sufficient cost for operating like this and on our soil. This is a plot against the U.S. citizen. The Biden administration missed a major opportunity to condemn this sort of stuff.
It's so extraordinary. In fact, there was just a case we had on Just the News, I think a couple of days ago, the Justice Department indicted an Iranian in Canada for trying to pull off some theft of intellectual property, and I think it was related to drugs or medical research. So there is a very active element of Iran on U.S. soil, and they're not acting in our interest. It's very important to realize that we're not a spectator far out there on our soil. In our communities, there are Iranian sleeper cells and intelligence activities that are going on, and sometimes we uncover them and hear about them. Many times we don't, but we shouldn't sleep at night thinking that the Iranians are leaving us alone, because they clearly aren't.
If I may just briefly on this point, because I think it's crucial for the audience, this is not for everyone to have to freak out about this thing. I'm an Iranian American, right. I'm a proud Iranian American. But at the same time, you have to realize that the regime has not been afraid to use and abuse people abroad for their illicit programs. So when you talk about, you know, the intellectual property, the dual use, the export control violations, the people that the U.S. catches, like the DOJ, they catch these people, the FBI, they catch these people. You know, we ultimately move them through our legal system. We may imprison them. We may, you know, fine them, whatever. But you know how these hostage swaps tend to go on, you know, the prisoner swaps between the Iranians and the U.S., for instance.
Right.
These things tend to go on. And ultimately, even though I'm all for getting our people out of the Islamic Republic, whenever the Islamic Republic, particularly under Foreign Minister Zarif, you know, kind of coyly floats that, you know, prisoner swap proposal, Washington should know what it's getting into. We should always be working overtime to bring back Americans home, because, you know, let's call it what it is. They are hostages inside Iran. They're not unjustly detained, or they're not prisoners or whatever. Right. Those are hostages in Iran that Iran takes because they want to actually get the people that are actually violating laws on our territory off. So in all those deals, those are unfair trades. We have innocent Americans coming home, and the regime is expecting to have sanctions violators, export control abusers, and other people who have abused and violated U.S. sanctions laws, who have contributed materially to Iran's nuclear, missile, military, and other programs off the hook. That's why this stuff is an unfair trade.
Yeah, no, it is. And people are just beginning to see the consequences of propping up last time. We, you know, if they hadn't been propped up in 15 and 16, who knows how history might have changed over the last 4 years, particularly with Trump's hardline policies. We had the Iraqi prime minister visit Joe Biden about a week ago, Saf al-Khatami, clearly someone that is Western friendly, a former journalist. And yet his position in Iraq and the dance he has to do with Iran seems more precarious. We've seen a couple military operations carried out by drones in recent weeks because Iranian militia are conducting attacks against Westerners with sometimes impunity. And then, you know, we send some rockets in and take out the area or the base they were using. But how long-term, how stable is Iraq from Iranian meddling, particularly as our presence and U.S. troops has diminished there significantly?
You know, I'm very worried about Iraq, and I'm very worried about how we look at Iraq as a country, as Americans here. It's good that the partnership with the prime minister continues. You know, we should not forget that that country has some elections coming up. There's been instability there in the past. You know, 2019 was a rocky year for Iraq, not just given the U.S.-Iran conflict on that territory, but it was a rocky year because of electricity shortages, water shortages, major protests. And these were protests in Iraq as well as in Lebanon against Iran-aligned forces, right. Shia militia groups, and the Trojan horse that Iran has tried to create in both of those states. And you saw the population genuinely rising up against it. Earlier in 2020, low gas prices coupled with the COVID pandemic really hit Iraq hard, really, really hit Iraq hard. That is a story that is not, unfortunately,
told
here in Iraq. But you know, listen, we got to help Iraq reject Iranian influence. We got to help Iraq get on its feet. We got to help Iraq through training, equipping missions to, you know, be able to politically and militarily go after these militias that are using Iraqi territory and using sometimes the cover of the Iraqi government to launch these drones, launch these rockets, place these IEDs, engage in these ambushes against the multinational force presence, and also against installations that are merely tied to the U.S. Presence, whether that's the embassy or the broader green zone or bases where the U.S. and Iraqi security forces are co-located. By my count alone, since Joe Biden came into office, there have been at least 27 independent different rocket and drone attacks.
Yep. And we've seen two dozen of them. Yeah.
Twice.
Yep.
And the U.S. has only used force twice.
Yeah.
This low response ratio is exactly why Iran and its cutouts feel comfortable escalating in Iraq. And with the recent news of the reframing of the U.S. mission, I would expect more escalation, more attacks, not less.
Wow.
And, it's a real sad story.
Silence and inaction, omission are in some ways an act of surrender. And I think it's in a remarkable time in American history that after all the blood that we spent protecting Iraq, that at this moment we're not engaging. And almost all of the military operations against Westerners in Iraq are backed by the Iranians, right? There's not a whole lot of other folks in there. These are mostly Iranian militias, Iranian-backed militias that are causing all of this mischief and violence, correct?
Yeah, there is still, you know, the ISIS contingent. You know, right. There are like IEDs and other attacks caused by ISIS, but the lion's share of these attacks directed at the facilities through through rockets and drones, and then of course the IEDs on the U.S. convoys can be tied to these SMGs, these Shia militia groups that Iran trains, equips, backs, supports politically and materially, and are ultimately loyal to Iran. They meet with Iranian intelligence and military officials when they go over there. They get their marching orders from there. And they are instruments of Iranian hard power in the region. And it's always funny when you hear U.S. officials under Democratic and Republican administrations saying there is no military solution in X country or Y country, because those are the countries, those are the domains, those are the jurisdictions that Iran actually has a nearly exclusive military strategy. And in some way, there's an article I co-wrote with another colleague of mine who used to be on the Hill, and he served before, I think, in Afghanistan. What Washington seems to be doing now is, rather than contesting Iran, we're just simply getting out of their way. And that's definitely the story of Afghanistan. And, you know, whenever the drawdown does happen in Iraq post-December, that would be the story there, too. Remember the famous Quds Force commander, infamous, I should say, Quds Force commander Qasem Soleimani?
Right.
He had a line that was reported in 2010 about him that I think is sad and prescient, and U.S. foreign policy should work overtime to disprove, but sadly hasn't been able to. And we're not like the Americans. We don't abandon our friends. And I think we got to make sure we know who our friends are in the region, and we got to stand by them. And we definitely have to make sure that when you're an adversary of the U.S., you don't get sanctions relief. You don't get a blind eye turned.
Yeah, that's the key. We've been sending mixed messages for years, and then we wonder why the world is the way it is. Benham, how do folks stay in touch with all the good work that you're doing at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies? How do people follow your work and stay in touch with you?
So I don't have a Twitter, but on the company website, fde.org, they actually have aggregated interviews, articles, commentary that I provided on this issue, as well as other broader strategic issues that affect U.S. foreign policy, and particularly the U.S. and the Middle East. You know, I think it's critical that, you know, we return to the concept of the informed citizenry. That's why I love to do this show and other shows. You know, we're not just talking amongst ourselves or to policymakers. We want to talk to the American public as well.
Yeah, so
FDD.org is where our website is. You can find my commentary as well as the commentary of my friends and colleagues on the Iran issue, as well as many other issues.
Well, go check it out, folks. FDD.org is such an important resource. The media may not be covering Iran, but Just the News and John Solomon Reports podcast, we're trying to stay focused on it because it's so much more critical than you would know from the discussions in Washington. We got to keep on and keep you informed, and having great interviews with folks like Benham is such a great opportunity. Benham, I want to thank you for your time, and I am certain we're going to have you back on the show soon to talk more about what's going on in Tehran.
Would be my pleasure. Thank you so much.
That's wonderful. Thank you. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to wrap things up for the day. Folks, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Why? It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I love the fruit flavors particularly, and it's completely improved my life and my health. This is nutrition the way nature intended. When I began taking a hard look at why I wasn't feeling good and why I felt unhealthy, why I was gaining weight, why I was losing energy, it wasn't just because I had hit my 50s. No, it was because I wasn't getting the right amount of fruit and vegetables in my diet. And listen, I'm just too busy to go to the store, clean up the vegetables, cook vegetable dinners, and make sure I hit the fruit. A Field of Greens stepped in. One scoop of powder in my drink or on my eggs in the morning, and boom, I was off and feeling better. And suddenly, I was losing weight. I was sleeping better. My metabolism went up. My blood sugar went down. My cholesterol went down, and my weight went down. And my doctor said, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it doing. You know what that is? It's Field of Greens. That's what I've been doing. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guarantee. Now, you're going to get 15% off your first order plus free rush shipping because of the incredible partnership we have here at Just the News with Brick House Nutrition and, of course, Field of Greens. All you got to do to take advantage of this offer, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JustNews. That's promo code JustNews at fieldofgreens.com. Don't wait. Go to fieldofgreens.com today. Use the promo code JustNews for 15% off. All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. So grateful that you joined us today. A special thanks to Congressman Stuby for joining us and for Benham Tallablue to join us. He really opened our, I think both men opened our eyes to what's going on from the border here in America to the bad conduct of inside Iran against its people and against American interests. Hard to believe that an American journalist was nearly kidnapped on our streets by Iranian intelligence. And yet we don't have much discussion of it in Washington. We don't have much outrage about it. It's as though this administration and its media allies don't see the significance of Iranian intelligence operatives on our soil. But we're keeping you informed. We're so grateful you joined the show today. Yes, we've been broadcasting live from the Freedom Phone Studios here in Washington, D.C. Check out the Freedom Phone. It's a tremendous opportunity. Go to justthenews.com/freedomphone if you're looking for a phone that enhances your privacy and celebrates and pushes apps that are free speech protecting. They won't censor. Well, that's what Eric Finman and the Freedom Phone folks have done for you. And you can get a special discount just because you're a Just the News fan, a John Solomon Reports fan. Check it out. That's why we've been naming the studio this whole month, the Freedom Phone Studio, in honor and celebration of a new phone that actually puts privacy and freedom of speech at the forefront of its strategy, of its motto, of its business ethos. Check it out. If it's right for you, you will get a tremendous phone. I have one. I love it. You will too. All right, folks, that wraps it up for the day. When we come back tomorrow, some big news will be breaking. Buckle your seatbelt. I think you're going to like the story we're going to tell about defunding the police. It should be available tomorrow morning. All right, until then, check out all the breaking news headlines at Just the News and, of course, at John Solomon Reports. God bless and good night. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. Folks, everyone knows the next medical crisis is just around the corner. Whether it comes in the form of a pandemic or something much more mundane like a tick bite, you and your family need to be prepared. That's what we learned from this last pandemic, right? That's where the Wellness Company comes in. You know the Wellness Company. We have their great doctors like Dr. Peter McCullough on all the time on our shows. The Wellness Company and their doctors are medical professionals that you can trust, and the new medical emergency kits are the gold standard when it comes to keeping you safe and healthy, and most importantly, prepared. Be ready for anything. This medical emergency kit contains an assortment of life-saving medications, including ivermectin and Z-Pak. The medical emergency kit provides a guidebook to aid in the safe use of all of these life-saving medications, so you know what you're doing. From anthrax to tick bites to COVID and even the bioweapon like the plague, the Wellness Company's medical emergency kit is exactly what you need to have on hand to be prepared. Rest assured knowing that you have emergency antibiotics, antivirals, and antiparasitics on hand to keep you and your family safe from whatever the globalists throw your way. Go to www.twchealth/justnews today in order. That's twc.health/justnews and use the promo code justnews to save 10%.